Within the first couple of months of me getting sober, I also wound up celibate. Hello, 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 and welcome to The Sober Butterfly. I'm your host, Nadine Movida, and if you're new to TSB, welcome. We are your favorite resource for sober talk, sober inspo, and sober travel. For all of my ride or dies, thank you for coming back. Now, this week's episode, we are talking about something fun. I'm so excited about this topic because today we're talking about being sober and single. Yeah, you heard me right. Being sober and single. I always hear people talk about sobriety and dating. Often, if you listen to like different sober podcasts, you'll find in people's archives episodes devoted to sober dating. And I myself was going on that track when I was thinking about this week's episode. I'm like, yeah, I really want to do a sober dating episode. But the truth is, I haven't been dating very much. So who am I to like put an episode out about sober dating? And I've been very single. Like, I'm in my single girl era to the max. Like, that is my aesthetic right now. I've been sober for a year and a half now, but yeah, I haven't had sex in a little over 14 months. Yeah, so I'm the definition of single. I'm so single it hurts, but not like in a bad way, like in a good hurt kind of way. I don't know, is that like sadistic of me to say? Is that weird for me to admit it? Okay, I'm kinky. I'm still kinky and celibate. That's a thing. Yeah, that's a thing. I don't think those two words have ever been used, by the way, in the same sentence. Kink and celibacy? I don't know. Alright, let's open with a little context, okay? A little context if you care to listen. I found myself in a shit position. The man that I love set me down last night. Okay, I'm done. But seriously, I used to fall in love very quickly. I'm gonna give you guys the spark notes, right? So there was never a point in time between the age of 6 to 30. That's a long span of time. There was never, and I'm not embellishing, there was never a point in time when I wasn't in a relationship with someone, actually in a relationship or a situationship, or in my mind. This is the crazy part. In my mind, in a relationship with someone, or obsessing over someone, fantasizing about someone, romanticizing someone that I'd met the day before. And I used to think it was like, oh, I'm just a romantic. I'm Charlotte, okay? In the Sex and the City group, I'm Charlotte with a mix of Carrie. My therapist was like, no, you are not Charlotte mixed with Carrie. You have something called limerence. And I'm like, limerence? What's that? Okay, so there's many definitions. I'm going off of brides.com because I actually like this one the best. I've done research, don't worry. But I like the way they summed it up. So limerence is basically a state of infatuation or obsession with another person that involves an all-consuming passion and intrusive thoughts. I'm going to say that one more time for my listeners at home. Limerence is a state of infatuation or obsession with another person that involves an all-consuming passion and intrusive thoughts. That was me in a nutshell. Constantly infatuated, but conflating or confusing infatuation with love because the spark was so undeniable. I'm just like, no, look, like this is my soulmate. This is my person. This is me meeting someone like 2 days ago. It's just like running with this idea that like their last name matches my first name perfectly. This is gonna work. This has to work. And also like the obsession part, which is the all-consuming passion and definitely all-consuming thoughts. They live in my head rent-free. If you've listened to past episodes, I sometimes refer to this guy that I was obsessed with. And it's kind of embarrassing, but I'm just going to speak my truth. Like, I want to blame COVID, but, like, it's really limerence. In the pandemic, I met a guy, and it was, like, a month-long fling, but, like, the limerence lied to me. And I thought that, like, he was my person, my soulmate. And we're kind of friends to this day. So, like, if you're listening, you know who you are. Hey, so this connects to my drinking, right? It was pandemic, so the world has stopped. I was spending a lot of time with this person because what else was there to do? We moved very quickly in my mind through different stages of a relationship that was never formal. Just in my mind, once again, like we were having physical, intimate relations. We were having sex. We were spending all this time together. I also felt like we just had good compatibility in terms of conversation. He was doing the bare minimum, and I was seeing that as though he was treating me like a goddess or a queen, right? I was just like, oh my God, he's so respectful because he, I can't even cite an example now. It's ridiculous. But in my mind, I'm just like, the minimal effort was me thinking that this man should be my husband. And then drinking throughout the pandemic, going over there, I realized that like most of our interactions were actually drunk and me initiating it because it was an easy way for me to connect with people. It was like my coping mechanism, but also my way of breaking the ice and definitely my way to have sex with someone. So we were always drinking together. Liquor stores were deemed essential businesses, if that puts anything into perspective for you. So I was able to get alcohol freely. I was also unhappy at the time of being back at home. And so I was just spending a lot of time there, drinking away the time. And then my limerence was going crazy. And then one day he basically was like, pump the brakes. Okay, girl, you're moving too fast. Let's just be friends. He friendzoned me. Yes. Can you believe it? I got friendzoned. But I got friendzoned and I did not take it very well. But pride and ego perked up. And I said to myself, cool. I was gonna friendzone you. This is great. This is like the lies I'm telling him and myself. So fast forward, then he goes on to his next destination. And what do you know? It just so happens I pop up in that city. This is during the pandemic, mind you. Okay. Summer 2020. Then he thought that was odd. I could tell he thought that was odd because I just know him. And then we both ended up in Tulum together, another different city now. And I just saw him hooking up with a bunch of girls. He was getting it in and I was not. I was holding out hope that he was my person. And I was like, this is like the limerence, right? I'm like, no, this is my future husband. So I have to act accordingly. I can't be in these streets fucking other people because then it will get back to him. It's a very small place. And I also, like, we're still hanging out because we have similar friend circles. And I'm like, I have to preserve my integrity. I have to preserve my womanhood for this man who doesn't even want me, who friendzoned me. And who also, by the way, is, like, fucking girls with BBLs and Instagram models and blah, blah, blah. Right? So, he even at one point, I never forget, we went to dinner. And he even tried to hook me up with his friend, who, by the way, was a viable candidate. I should have taken him up on the offer. Actually, no, I take that back. He choked me. Yeah, we didn't have sex. He just literally, wow, drinking. We went to a dinner. I didn't eat anything because I was like trying to be skinny as possible. I was super intimidated in Tulum by these Instagram models. So I was trying to be as thin as possible and blend in. And so I didn't eat anything, but of course we're in Mexico. So I'm throwing back tequila shots and mezcal. And the guy that I was in limerence with was with another girl and then went to go meet another girl, not even the girl that he was with, left me with his friend. He's like, yeah, he's a good match for you. This dude ends up choking me at the dinner table. Like, as we get up to leave, he like, you know, I don't know if he felt entitled because he paid for everything, but he's like, come here. And then he like chokes me. And then I told my friend about it and he's like, oh yeah, that's his signature move. I'm like, what? What? I didn't end up hooking up with that guy. Not because I had self-esteem or standards, but because, like I said, I was preserving myself for this other man who didn't want me. So anyway, a few weeks in Tulum, I couldn't handle it anymore. I was at my breaking point on the beach, drunk, with nothing in my stomach, except for alcohol and a cocktail, whatever, after being solicited for a threesome that I did not partake in. I was sitting on the beach and I was having like a complete mental breakdown. And I booked a flight the next day to go to Mexico City. I'm not going to spend too much time going into detail about what my dating history looked like in Mexico City. Let's just say it was no bueno, okay? It was not good. It was a hot ass mess. I was healing from a broken heart. I shouldn't be air quoting that in case you couldn't tell in the inflection of my voice, but I had a broken heart. So even though this is the crazy part about limerence, even though it's not true love, and now I can definitely see that from perspective and time, at that point in time, you couldn't have told me anything different. I was hurt. I was butt hurt. I was sad. I was heartbroken. And so I acted accordingly. F love, even though I should have been like saying F limerence, but I'm like F love. And I started to act out as though I was a newly single divorcee with two grown kids, you know? Like, I was just like, oh, I'm about to start living my life again. It's like, you never stop living your life, crazy girl, but okay. I had a lot of fun until I stopped having fun. And I can remember distinctly when I stopped having fun, reality creeping in, but I was like, I can't do this anymore. So I made a change, and shortly thereafter, I left Mexico, came back to the States, and got sober, like maybe 3 months later. Yeah, about 3 months later, I got sober. I think that's enough context. If you go through a program like AA, they will say the first year or so of your sobriety, you should not date. And I remember I was going to meetings online at the time, and I had a sponsor, and she said the same thing to me. She said, okay, I think, in hearing some of my dating history especially, she was like, I think you need to take a break from dating. And I was very unwilling to hear that feedback. I was like, I think you just met me. I think you just met me and you're not my therapist. So yeah, I'm going to do what I want. So when I received that feedback from my sponsor, I was like, girl, no. So then my therapist said it. It's self-predication. I'm like, are you in cahoots with my sponsor? Like, what is happening? and that's when she was also introducing this term of limerence to me. Okay, fine, fine, fine. There's only so many times you can ignore the signs, I suppose. And the way that my therapist presented limerence was also like, she described it through the analogy of it being like a train signal. So imagine like a train signal. And if you live in New York or if you live in a major city, it's really annoying when you're on the train and it's like, it stops because the train signal is flashing red, right? It's not time to go. You have to wait. And so that's how she described it. She's like, yeah, your blinders or your train signal, it's broken. Okay, we need to work on you being able to recognize when it's time to blink green. So go, because the person is showing you all the green flags versus not ignoring when the blinders are blinking yellow or red and just proceeding without caution. And that has been how I've maneuvered my dating history from a very young age. And so getting sober really helped with that, because when you're sober, there's less buffer, right? Like you can't use a substance to mask certain characteristics that you notice in yourself or in other people. The natural progression really just fell into place. First time I had sober sex was about a month into me getting sober. It was the worst sex I've ever had. And also, I think I mentioned in last week's episode, like, I've had more drunk sex than I have had sober sex just throughout my lifetime. It was the first time I'd ever have had sober sex for the first time. Does that make sense? Like, I've had sober sex in the past, but like in relationships, and I just happened to be sober, so I'm like, fine. But like, this was the first time I'd ever had sex with someone for the first time without any substances. And it was terrible. Not just terrible because I was sober. It was just like the worst sex I've ever had. So that also left a bad taste in my mouth. And I was just like, damn. So that was my first time having sex sober. And getting sober, you don't have as much opportunities to force things in life that just should flow. And that's one of the beauties, I think, that I needed to learn through sobriety, is like, connections are real. And I don't want to tell people what to do, especially women, what to do with their bodies, because I've had discussions with friends and they're like, well, are you celibate? Like, are you really not trying to have sex? And I was like, that's not the mission per se, but like, I know now that I don't want to have sex with anyone. I don't want to have casual sex. Now, if you want to have casual sex, go for it. I support your decision. It's your body. But I've had enough casual sex for a lifetime. I don't want to do that anymore. And I can't do it. Like, it's not even that I don't want to. I cannot do it. Like, I cannot meet someone for the first time or on the second date, the third date even, and allow them to enter my body. And I actually, this may sound prudish, I cannot believe, like, who was that girl? Like, I cannot believe that I let people who I barely remember their names have access to me in that way. Because now I see myself as this like truly sacred divine being, and like the power of the pussy is real. Okay, so now a quick transition into what it's been like sober and single. So I talked about life before, brief history, trust me, it gets more nuanced, but to save you time, then I kind of touched on, like, early days of sobriety, having, like, that awkward, well, not even awkward, bad sex experience, and then taking a little hiatus from dating because I needed to, because it was pointed out to me and I couldn't, you know, ignore the good advice and signs and feedback I was getting. And I was also just tired, right? I was just tired of, like, doing the same thing. So then I kind of moved into this phase of isolation in a way. I think this is a natural phase for a lot of sober people where it's like you're trying to relearn who you are and relearn how to operate in the world. And so for me, that looked like taking the time to sort of like remove people and places and things, right? Like we hear this a lot. And I didn't go out as much. So I was able to stay home more and then just kind of learn and get to know myself better as a sober woman, as a sober woman. And I'm really glad I took that time. But then, you know, you start to get a little lonely, right? You start to like crave attention. I got sober at 30. So I'm like, girl, you look good. It's time to show the world this new sober you. And like a part of me is like, yeah, like also wanting to prove to people I'm still fun. I'm still social. I'm still me. And I just happen to be sober. But it doesn't always work like that. And I want to caution people from forcing, especially if you are single. This is once again coming from a single background. If you're single, don't necessarily look to find relationships. I've heard a lot of stories where women, it's almost like addiction replacement. So like you go from not drinking to now having lots of sex. So my experience was like I stopped having casual sex, but I've heard the opposite of that be women who, boom, that's their next thing. That's their next fix. It's like, I want to fuck. And once again, no judgment. I've been there. but at the same time, it's like, be mindful of that. I think it's helpful to take some time and just completely stop fucking, right? Just take time for you. Don't date. I don't want to disclose a set length of time that is an individual experience, but I will say don't force it, don't rush it. So there's that. I'm really loving the Miley Cyrus Flower song. You know the song, but I'll play it. And essentially people are saying that it's a good anthem for women to buy them flowers, for example. That's why it's called Flowers. Or to take them dancing because they can do it all by themselves. This is a song, right? So she's just basically reminding us we can do all the things. We don't need a man to do any of this for us, right? So running with that theme, like I made a little reel and I got some really good feedback from people. They had basically mixed Bruno Mars's, one of his songs, like, I should have bought you flowers and held your hand. So I did like that. I'll just play it for you. Really clever. Really clever, right? I made it real because I thought it was really clever how they mixed those two songs together. And I got a lot of like questions. So by the way, if you are not following me on Instagram, why not? I am at the Sober Period Butterfly on Instagram and on TikTok. And so one girl in particular asked a question that I thought was really great. So I wanted to address that because I think a lot of people have similar questions when it comes to sobriety. Okay, so she asked me, she said, I love this, but how do you deal with the loneliness in sobriety? Not even in romance, but friendships as well. If you're listening at the Love I Give 444, thank you for that question. It was a great question. I love that question because I think so many people worry about loneliness. And I just want to open with something that maybe cliche, but it, you know, it's cliche for a reason. It's true, which is if you are lonely, like you may want to reconsider the company that you keep. You should never be lonely in your own company. Now, I am an ambivert. I used to think I was an extrovert, and then in sobriety, I was like, no, I'm an introvert. And now I realize it's middle of the road for me. Like, I feel energized with people and by myself. It just depends on the context or on the situation. I think for me, the company you keep is extremely important. Who you surround yourself amongst is important. There were days in my early sobriety that I felt most alone amongst people, and the common thread to me feeling lonely was them drinking in my presence and me being sober and not feeling prepared to have those interactions, or feeling like it was just like the energy, the calibration, the vibes were off because they were drinking and just then intoxicated, and here I am in my sober state and I have nothing to really connect with you about. I shared that part with you. And then what I really wanted to get to, the nuts and bolts of this response, is how you can combat that loneliness. Because I understand, like, I'm coming from a place where, like, I really enjoy and seek, I seek out me time now. I never used to be like that. As mentioned, because of my limerence, because of my obsession with men and always thinking about being in a relationship or actually being in a relationship, I never wanted to really be by myself. I would rather be with someone, even if that company wasn't good for me, and forego my needs, as mentioned before, forego my happiness for the sake of just having someone to call my own. First of all, you can't call anyone your own. It's not about ownership, right? The only person you can call your own is yourself. And yeah, I think if you can even remove the ego from this idea of needing someone to possess, you'll be better off for it. So that's one part. Then I definitely believe that, you know, it's all about quality at this point. It's like, if you don't have any other sober people in your life, or people that you can identify, or people that support your sobriety, then you have to be able to count on yourself. You have to be able to look inward and know that, you know, you're in a situation right now where you don't have people. It won't be like that forever, but you always have yourself at the end of the day. That's never going to change. And like I said, cliche to know this, you came to this world by yourself, you're going to leave this world by yourself. But at the same time, it's I take solace in that. Like, as bleak as that may sound, I actually feel good knowing that no matter what, I got me. You don't have to get me. I got me. If you're sober and the only sober person you know, it doesn't have to stay like that. I don't know where you live. I don't care where you live. If you are listening to this podcast, you have access to modern technology. So therefore, you have access to a wide network of sober people who can make up your community. I have a lot of my good friends that are sober. Some I have never even met before because we only connect online. It doesn't mean that we will never meet. We met through a social media platform, which is why I will always sing the praises of sober Instagram and sober TikTok. It's almost like dating, right? It's like online dating. You're like swipe, swipe, swipe. Okay, I'm chatting you for a few weeks. Now I want to meet in person, or a few months, or whatever. It varies. But I have made real life connections. Like, one of my favorite connections, Keisha, if you're listening, Keisha over at Done With Debauchery, she lives in Toronto, and like, we were chatting online for a little bit, and then I was like, this is gonna sound crazy. Maybe it's my limerence flaring up. I'm like, this is gonna sound crazy, but what if I came to Toronto? Now, it's not that crazy. I'm in New York. It's an hour flight. But I'm like, what if I came to Toronto? And then she was like, oh my god, sounds amazing. We can have a sober girl meetup. I've been meaning to meet up with girls in my city. So it was just an entry, and she's doing more sober meetups now, and she still has her podcast going, and it's just amazing, like, the network of people that are so willing and so ready to also meet other sober people. Because if you feel lonely in sobriety, trust and believe that other people also feel lonely and lonely in their sobriety. You just kind of have to, like, make the connection happen, and it doesn't have to be in real life, but like, it can be if you want it to be. It's about where you are, meeting yourself where you are. But I would definitely suggest sober Instagram. We're gonna start wrapping up, mainly because I have to go to spin. I have to go spinning. I want to end on a positive note. If you are lonely in sobriety, you are not alone. Connection truly is the opposite of addiction. Just find ways to connect with people. It does not have to only be sober people. It does not only have to be in person. It does not only have to be someone who can become your next best friend or your next boyfriend or your next whoever. But what I will say is it does have to be someone who is deserving of you and someone that recognizes the importance of your sobriety. Where I'm at right now in my sober sober solo girl era, or like my single sober girl aesthetic, is I am happily single for the first time in my life. I've been single before, but not happily. I'm happily single. I'm loving it. But I'm also open. I really am open to the prospect of being in a relationship, but only if it's healthy. Only if it makes sense. Only if it elevates my lifestyle. Yes, I'm gonna say that. Like, I don't care how that sounds. I'm so good with me right now. Like, you would have to really match that energy. I'm not looking to mold myself, contort myself into a different person like how I've done in the past. I don't know if my limerence is healed because I had some dates lined up. I think I mentioned this either last week's episode or the week before. I had some dates lined up with like people that I didn't even really like. But I was trying to be open and like say, okay, well, you haven't been on a date in a while. No, I don't need to go on a date, but like I also think it's helpful to like almost like a job, right? Where it's like you interview just for the sake of like keeping it fresh and making sure that you're honing your interview skills or whatever. So I'm like, okay, maybe I just need to get out there. But like one guy I met out, I'll wrap this up, I'll make this quick, but like I went out with a guy and he got drunk. Like I went to dinner with a friend. At the dinner, we ended up, it's a long story, like New York table, they didn't take reservations. It was a mess. They sat us at this table right by the door. It was freezing cold. So we joined this guy and his friend. They welcomed us to their table. We sat with them. We ate with them. They invited us to like party with them that night. I was like, F it. It's MLK weekend. I'm going to have fun. I'm going to go with the flow. I'm going to say yes more. So we ended up hanging out with them. We ended up at a club. I haven't been to the club in a long time. And then slowly throughout the night, he ended up drinking and getting drunk. And then at the end of the night, he like walked me and my friend to the subway station and he asked for my number. And I think because maybe he was in front of his friend and he'd been so nice, I didn't want to be rude. So I gave him my number, but I wasn't interested. And then we've like texted since then. He like, you know, was asking me out on a date and I was going to go, but then, you know, I don't know if it's my, like, this is back to the limerence. Like, the red flags were there. I don't want to date anyone who gets drunk. I'm sorry. I don't. That's not fun. You can drink, but I don't want you to get drunk. That's not cute to me. And then I was, like, saying things like, maybe it was a fluke. Maybe it was a one-off. No, he's showing you who he is. Like, that's a first impression. That's a first interaction. If he was really interested in getting to know me, because I made it very clear that I was sober, he wouldn't have drunk so much to the point of getting drunk and running in the street. So, yeah, I have some work to do around my limerence, but I say all that to say, like, we are all works in progress. It's okay. You're never going to be fully healed. You're never going to fully, like, be recovered. It's just a matter of taking inventory of where you are, using that data to fuel your next steps and make better decisions in the future. So I hope that's helpful. I'm happily sober and single, but I also am like happily open to dating and like, but it has to make sense. Make it make sense. Oh my God, I forgot to tell you, I'm going to a podcast conference in Orlando. It's called Podfest. So hopefully I'll get lots of like tips and tricks to help produce even better content for you guys. But in the interim, can you do me a favor and please just go ahead and leave a review for this show? Leave a review from the heart. It does not need to be a 5-star review if you don't think it's 5-star quality. I just want your feedback so I can implement it. Thank you guys so much for listening. I love you so much. I hope that you enjoyed this week's episode.